Have you ever wondered what would happen if a heat ray made of nuclear power ran through your city? Do you think that your home is up to code to withstand the sheer force of the ray? It definitely is not, so call us at Nucleo Shield to set up your new fortress today. We will come in and install a titanium wall around your home that pops up with just a touch of a button. Good if you think a nuclear-fueled monster is coming through your town, or maybe just the next Chernobyl. No matter the nuclear disaster, we got you covered. Not exactly Godzilla-proof. If he steps on your house, that's your own fault. Messaging rates may apply. Not available in any coastal cities.
Is this a metal thing?
Yes!
Talk. I'm Sydney Lee, your fun-loving buddy old pal. And here with me is Max Allen, the boy wonder, and the fan favorite OG host Bryce Hansen. We are so excited to get back to our roots by solely reviewing horror movies. New theatrical releases always get priority, but we also review older horror movies, both good and horrible. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Full video available on YouTube. Don't be a square. Make sure to share. Also check out patreon.com/horrormovietalk, the equivalent of the adult section at your video rental store. And if you want to add your peepee to the community pool, go to horrormovietalk.com or call 682-253-4468 and leave us a voicemail. We've got a great show today. We are reviewing Godzilla Minus One. We'll start out by giving a brief review and our score for the movie. We score on a scale of 1 to 10, no half C's allowed here. I have been.
You've been scarred. You've been traumatized before by trying to do a half score.
After we give the score, we'll get into spoilers, take a deeper dive into what we liked and hated about the film. Later, we're going to do horror movie horrors. We haven't done that in a while, and I want to hear from you guys. There's a couple voicemails out there. Saw a couple of the emails about it, and I'm excited to listen. All right, so Godzilla Minus One is in theaters now. Around me, it was at weird time, so I had to go like 20 minutes away, but no big deal.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say it's probably not in theaters anymore by the time you hear this. I think it's in the second run theater here now. Like, I went the last day where it was in the regular theaters. Yeah. It'll be available somewhere
soon,
I'm sure.
Yeah, it'll be
streaming
somewhere for rent somewhere. But yeah, the theater closest to me was like, oh, we're showing at 1 p.m. And I was like, well, I have to work, so I can't really go see that. But...
Well, honestly, we were probably the last people to see it. So if you're listening to this podcast, probably. Good chance you've seen the movie.
Right.
But it still counts as a new movie.
That's true.
Okay, it only came out like a month ago.
Yeah, it's still in theater. In theaters.
Exactly.
It still has a theatrical release.
All right, so this movie, it's directed by Takashi Yamazaki. Godzilla Minus One follows the story of Koichi, played by Kamiki Ryunosuke, a kamikaze pilot at the end of World War II who didn't want to go full kamikaze, so he says that his plane is faulty and lands on Odo Island for repairs. Once there, a baby Godzilla arrives and decimates everyone except for Koichi and Tachibana, the main repairman. Koichi eventually makes it back to his home in Tokyo to find that his parents have died and Tokyo has been almost flattened by the war. Koichi encounters a girl named Noriko, played by Minami Hamabe, and she latches onto him for support for her and the baby she is carrying, and they become a happy family. A couple years later, Godzilla comes back bigger and better than ever. Will Koichi defeat the monster? You'll have to wait and see. So my review, this movie has it all. It had me laughing, crying, shocked, upset, enthralled. To bounce from hard-hitting emotional scenes to incredibly jarring and crazy action scenes have it effortlessly flow is extremely difficult, yet director Yamazaki did it seamlessly. It was a wonderful movie that depicts Japan's ruin and rebuilding after World War II and how the war never left anyone's minds even for a second. Oh, and Godzilla was absolutely killer. I have never seen another Godzilla movie in full before. Kill me, I know. But I can tell that they went back to the basics and kept what worked from the original and newer films. From the score to the visual effects to the character building, it was absolutely flawless. The Japanese invented Godzilla. It's only right that they are the best at making films about it. And I give this a 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm.
Nice. High praise.
So what do you guys think? Wow.
Yeah, I really liked it too. The only Godzilla movie that I've seen in full is Godzilla versus King Kong.
Are you guys kidding me? I've seen like six Godzilla movies, and they're all fun in their own way.
Okay, nerd.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think I tried watching the first one, and it was just like too much like 50s sci-fi scientists in buildings talking about things, and not enough Godzilla stomping on things to capture my attention. It's like, I mean, if you watch like Mystery Science Theater 3000, like the types of movies where it's just a bunch of scientists talking science about sci-fi topics for 90% of the movie, that's what the original felt like. And to be honest, it had a little bit of that in this. It really seemed to recapture that kind of 50s style sci-fi movie vibe, while also, you know, integrating like a really you know, a real emotional core with the main character and his family, or his adopted family. And yeah, it did many things really well. I really enjoyed it too. And in terms of like a stand-in as kind of an analogy of the fear and guilt around the atomic bomb in Japan, like it's like does a real service to kind of what the original Godzilla was the stand-in for.
Did you notice that they, in the American versions, they always make Godzilla kind of the good guy? Kind of. It's kind of odd. I wonder why they do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I mean, it came out in the 50s, so there's definitely, you know, your grandpas or great-grandpas were not like, oh no, not the Japanese. Don't destroy Tokyo.
Yeah.
Like when they're still having like PTSD of people jumping out of holes and firing on them. So yeah, I mean, I think it's really good. It was definitely hyped up before I went and saw it as being a really great movie. I give it a 9 out of 10. I don't have a strong reason for not giving it a 10, but it's just not...
It's a bitch move.
It's you know, I was emotionally affected by it, but it's not like something that I would come back and say, like, this is a movie everyone has to see. I don't know. I mean, just chalk it up to racism, I guess.
I do. Yeah, I also give it a 10 out of 10. I thought it was a perfect Godzilla movie, probably the best Godzilla movie I've ever seen. Really like the topic of like suicide bombing. I just think that that's like a taboo topic that I haven't heard in like forever, and so it's really interesting to have that be one of the main focuses of the movie. And like as far as themes go, I just thought that like I don't always pick the theme that like everyone else seems to notice. For me, the theme was like preserving human life is more valuable than sacrificing human life. And I just thought that was really interesting. And so for a Godzilla movie to have a really interesting plot as well as cool effects and action, that was just great. Because I feel like a lot of, especially like the American versions, really just focus on how good they can make the CGI on Godzilla and how cool it looks when he's like fighting other monsters, which is awesome. And I like that. But the story is often very dumbed down and put to the side. And this felt like the story was the main thing we were there for, and Godzilla was just this huge cherry on top that was doing all sorts of cool stuff. And he looked pretty good, other than like a few scenes where I think that he looked a little weird. But that was kind of just the style they went for, and I thought it was really cool. So yeah, I give it a 10 out of 10. I thought it was super fun and probably the best Godzilla movie I've ever seen. And I think you should go see it.
Well, that's high praise.
You know, I just realized that there's another Godzilla movie that I saw all of, which was Godzilla 1998 by Roland Emmerich, starring Matthew Broderick.
Wait, 1998? That's not the dinosaur one, right? Where he's like a T-Rex?
Well, he looks a little different. He doesn't look like your regular Godzilla, but it's just as good. No, it's a terrible movie.
So I've seen all three of the newest American ones. That's Godzilla 2014, Godzilla King of Monsters, and Godzilla versus Kong. And I liked all of those. I didn't think they were like amazing movies. I definitely wouldn't give them 10 out of 10. And then I've also seen Shin Godzilla, which is a wild ride.
I've heard that's the one to see if you're going to see like traditional Godzilla.
It's, that one also has a pretty boring storyline. It's a lot of like government stuff, a lot of just like meeting in rooms. But the Godzilla design is so wacky and over the top and crazy and kind of scary. And so I think that movie is kind of, I see a lot of that movie in this one as well.
Yeah. My Godzilla. I just realized this came out before you guys were born, probably.
Size does matter. Yes, it did.
This is very much a 90s. So you can see the design there. He's very much, he is more dinosaur-like.
Wow, that's really different.
I don't like that.
It's got a great soundtrack, I gotta say. I'll plug the soundtrack, which I had playing on my stereo all the time. But yeah, this is an awful
movie. Whoa, they created a little town for that?
Yeah, man. This was a big budget movie. Like, this was
actually really cool.
The blockbuster of 98, you know, and it failed horribly in the box office. It was...
They're probably riding off the success of Jurassic Park, which was in 1990, and they were like, "Ooh, we should make Godzilla like more dinosaur-y because everyone's obsessed with dinosaurs right now." But I don't think that. I mean, I didn't see it, but like the way Godzilla looks, even in like the 50s ones, he doesn't look like a dinosaur. He looks like a monster, and I think that's what you need to push on that. And like Godzilla looked crazy in this movie, like. I saw a little bit of Godzilla versus Kong, and I just, like, I don't know. It's the emotional part of it that I think American movies can get wrong, because they, like, try to push this emotional agenda, and it's like, but you don't really care about the characters as much as, like, this movie really set up the characters. They really made you love the characters before shit went crazy. So I think, you know...
I mean, Godzilla versus Kong was fun. I mean, it was like they knew what they were, what audience wanted Godzilla versus Kong.
There's a
movie.
Giant robot in it. It's awesome.
The Mecha Godzilla, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mecha Godzilla was in it. It's like, sure, why not? People love robots. Yeah. So. Anyways, I think we all agree it was good.
Yeah.
People should see it.
Yeah, definitely go see it. But if you are listening to these commercials, you know you don't have to. you can go to our Patreon at horrormovietalk.com/Patreon, and you can give us money, and you can listen to episodes with no ads and with no mid-roll, and you can get extra episodes, you can get the after pods. It's really worth it, and our Patreon pick that's going to be coming out soon, or will probably be out around the same time as this episode, is really fun and interesting, and you guys are going to love it. So subscribe to our Patreon. Also on horrormovietalk.com, you can go to our shop. You can buy sweatshirts. You can buy t-shirts. You can support us, and they're great. They're great quality. They're very comfy. You should get some. And also, don't forget to check out our resident artist, Dustin Goebel, a professional artist who fucks hard. He also takes commissions for artwork from HMT fans. Contact him at dgoebel00 on Instagram and make your artistic dreams come true. Tell him that HMT sent you. And our voicemail line, once again, is 682-253-4468. And you could be on one of our episodes, which is so much fun. And, you know, just thanks for listening. Thanks again for listening. Let's get into spoilers. Spoilers. The movie starts at the end of World War II, in 1945. Koichi, like I said in the synopsis, he lies about his plane being faulty because he really didn't want to kill himself as a kamikaze. And so he lands on Odo Island, and everyone catches on to him. Like, they check out his plane, and they're like, hey, nothing's wrong with your plane, man. Like, what do you mean? And then, boom, Godzilla comes. So no time to ridicule Koichi, because everyone starts getting ripped apart. And that's a fun way to start a Godzilla movie, is just being like, here we are, here we go. This is what's going on. But from the bits and pieces of other Godzilla movies I've seen, he's obviously really small in this. So this is like the start of Godzilla. Like, this is like, I mean, I wouldn't say like the birth, but yeah, I guess it could be. Like, I guess this is like the prequel to all the Godzillas.
I think it talks about how later, like, all the radiation from like testing bombs has, like, mutated him.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, it shows the Bikini Atoll bomb and shows him get irradiated.
I was going to ask what that was, because I wasn't sure. Because I was like, I think I need to know background knowledge about Godzilla to understand what the atoll scene was.
Oh, Bikini Atoll, it's just was one of the testing sites for, like, the A-bomb.
Oh, okay.
Or was that after? Yeah, I think that was after the war.
Which would make sense, because the war had just ended, and then they do that testing in here.
Yeah, so it starts, and it's like, it mentions that it's like basically days away from the war ending. What is the most like noticeable exclusion from this movie is there is zero mention of the A-bomb of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and it's really interesting because it shows the aftermath of Tokyo being firebombed, which is probably the more devastating attack in terms of like human casualties, I think. And it doesn't mention the A-bomb, like, it doesn't like have a scene where that happens, you know. And yeah,
I guess because the characters just didn't live in that area, and so they were more concerned with the raid.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's that, sure, yeah, but I mean, like, it feels like it underlines more what Godzilla is really symbolizing, which is like nuclear power and the destructive effects of it. Because when Godzilla makes his attack in Tokyo a couple years later, it's like okay, well, this is very obviously a commentary on, you know, the nuclear attack.
Yeah, which I love. I think that that's exactly what Godzilla should be there to represent. And I like the name of the movie, Godzilla Minus One. I took it as Japan was already at ground zero, completely devastated, and now they're set back yet again with Godzilla. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that was just a really interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, that is interesting. Do we know why it's called Minus One? Like, what the... Is there a rationale on that specifically?
Should we find out real quick?
The Minus One refers to the fact that the Japanese had already been devastated by World War II. Wow, you're
look at, I'm right on the money.
Did you just steal this from IMDb?
No, I
brought
did not.
Down. Yeah, it says brought down to zero.
I've talked to other people about it. I've talked
but
to my friends about it. So
with the emergence of Godzilla, it puts Japan into the negative. Wow, this reflected in the film's original Japanese tagline, which translates to post-war Japan from zero to minus. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, so I mean, it's a... Godzilla is a monster, you know? It's like he was a monster that existed before, you know, from this opening scene. But the... you know, atomic war has made it even worse, which is like this specter of absolute destruction that hangs over everyone's head, which is apt. I mean, it's a really great analogy, you know, of post-World War II, and like everyone was all traumatized and everyone's like trying to handle survivor's guilt and trying to rebuild, like, absolutely the entire world is, like, destroyed. And also, it might happen again soon, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is...
Yeah, I'm just, like, I'm telling you, Godzilla works better as a bad guy. And mm-hmm. it's just so awkward when American directors are like, well, but what if Godzilla was necessary? What if we needed Godzilla? And he was really important, actually.
Yeah, I mean, what... Aren't some of the Japanese movies, isn't Godzilla kind of the, aren't they cheering on Godzilla in some of the movies? Like, especially the...
I haven't seen all the Japanese ones.
I mean, even the name of Godzilla in Japan is Gojira! So it sounds like they're more excited about him. Right? No?
Maybe. Maybe no, they're excited about it.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, I think there's different... I might be completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure that at different times, Godzilla's kind of seen as maybe not the hero, but, like, the ones that they're getting behind in a certain situation. I don't know if, you know, Mothra's the bad guy in Godzilla versus Mothra.
I think Mothra is also a good guy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so, I don't know. That's a good question. I guess I should probably watch some Godzilla movies.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we? So, yeah, Koichi and Tachibana are the only two people that survive, and Tachibana is really mad at Koichi, so kind of wants nothing to do with him because he didn't... It's very dishonorable to not, complete your kamikaze mission in Japan, which was very evident when he got back to Tokyo, and his neighbor was, like, absolutely pissed that he... came back. But then you find out, after he finds out that his parents are dead, he's obviously very upset, but he's talking to, like, a picture of his parents, and he said, you told me to come back alive, so I came back alive, and you guys aren't here anymore. And it's like, it's really sad. It's really sad.
Yeah. That was that was another kind of theme that I was looking at, was like, what's more important? Honor to your country or honor to your family? And it's like, his family was obviously telling him, do whatever it takes to come home alive.
Right.
And his country was saying, do whatever it takes to die right now in this plane.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's interesting because, like, especially with like American portrayals of the Japanese in World War II, it's very it doesn't show any of the human side. It's like they're so zealous and indoctrinated into you know, sacrificing themselves for the war that it's just a very daunting enemy, because they're willing to literally just commit suicide to make sure that a missile lands. But you know, humans are humans, and so I'm sure every single one of those kamikaze pilots were conflicted, because you're indoctrinated and you're like told that this is the honorable thing, and you're given all this importance from your sacrifice, and so you kind of have to intentionally blind yourself to like looking at the rational questions, which are like, can't we just drop a bomb like everyone else?
Yeah.
And then fly away? Or
yeah.
Like does it really matter if everyone, I mean, that's the thing, like in the opening scene, you know, they kind of discover that, like, okay, he's probably lying about this plane being malfunctional, but also the lead mechanic was like, I get it, bro, like the war is gonna end anyways, everyone knows it, like why would this matter, you know?
Yeah.
And so you look at it as like, okay, yeah, why would you do that, you know? Why would you go out and sacrifice yourself when it's a foregone conclusion how the war is going to end at that point? But and then it has like the secondary action, which is while Godzilla is attacking this little island of mechanics, they asked Koichi to fire his gun from the plane at
and
Godzilla.
And he freezes
because, you know, he doesn't want Godzilla's attention. He's watching it.
Yeah.
Godzilla completely decimate everyone around him. He's like, maybe as long as he's not looking, I shouldn't poke him on the shoulder. And and so that incident's where it's kind of interesting what the movie does, because it takes the abandoning of his kamikaze mission as understandable, but also it creates a stand-in for that in this scene where it's like, yeah, but you also should have fired on Godzilla with your gun, because you didn't do that, it resulted in the death of all these people. And
right,
so that's
yeah.
kind of how they were treating the failure of the kamikaze mission as well, which is like, no, yes, you saved yourself, but by saving yourself, you possibly got a lot of people killed.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's shown as like a reasonable decision, but it also... with that scene of him in the plane not shooting Godzilla, I think it kind of shows that, you know, he's also a little cowardly, you know, he's,
right.
at this point in the movie, at least.
Right.
He probably made a good decision not killing himself for no reason,
mm-hmm.
But he also won't stick his neck out to save other people, which is a problem.
Yeah.
So then he goes back and... I was confused about the picture thing that he got on the ship on the way home for a while, but it was the pictures of all of the men that died, either the kamikazes or the people on the Odo Island. And
mm-hmm.
then that, I mean, like, that mixed with the war that happened around him and seeing Godzilla kill people, he just has, like, really bad PTSD, and he has these nightmares of Godzilla, and they're recurring, and he thinks he's dead, and that's like a theme throughout the movie, that he keeps thinking he died, and this is like some dream that he's been living, like, especially once, like, he meets Noriko, and like she kind of invites herself in because she's homeless and she has this baby that was given to her by the parents that died. They said take care of this baby, so there's like a little adoptive family going on, and he just feels guiltier and guiltier as the years go by, for like the mistakes he's made and the dishonor that he's done, and he thinks like somehow by not like well, this is what I got from it. He thinks somehow by not being, like, killing himself in the plane, he kind of caused his parents to die. And so I think he just feels this immense guilt, and he feels guilty for not shooting the gun. And he, like, it's just constant guilt, and it just eats him alive. And that's why he, like, everyone's telling him to marry Noriko, and he's like, no, no, like, no, I can't. And I think that's one of the reasons why, is he's like, I'm so fucked up. Like, I'm so fucked up. And, like, I could dishonor you. I could, like, I could, I don't know what I'll do. So I don't want to just, like, go into this. And it, and that does play into, like, the cowardly portion of himself too, because he's like, oh, I'm so fucked up, which is true. Like, he does have this PTSD, and it's very real, but it's also like, just take the leap. And that is something that it takes him a long time, like the whole movie. That's like the whole movie is him trying to take that leap and get there.
He's also very, I mean, he's afraid of really putting himself out there in any regards. So, like, their adoptive daughter, who's been living with them for like 2 years, he won't let her call him dad.
It's so sad.
And that's very confusing for her, because she honestly believes that these people are her mother and father, and she doesn't understand how she got there. But the guy is like distant and won't, you know, have any relationship with her, which is really sad.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if that has any additional meaning other than just like him not able to open up or accept the responsibility. But yeah, that's devastating. Seeing a little baby crying. Yeah. We're back. Don't worry. Nothing's wrong here. Everything's going swimmingly over at Horror Movie Talk. You're talking about he was hired to destroy the landmines in the ocean, which I'm not sure is the proper nomenclature for mines in the ocean. I don't think they're actually called landmines.
I guess it's just mines.
I think one of the prerequisites for a landmine is land, but you know, I could be wrong. Maybe they treat
Bryce,
it differently.
Don't
in Japan.
Flex on us with your World War II knowledge.
I know. So yeah, he's hired to destroy the mines in the ocean.
Yep.
And they're on kind of a relatively rickety boat. And so we get to meet the ragtag team, which is the captain, Koichi, like a young kid that doesn't seem actually that young at all compared to the rest of them, and the scientist with crazy hair.
Yeah.
It's funny because on Twitter, like after this movie premiered, they were like, oh, hot scientist from Godzilla. So like when I went to see it, I was like, see what this is about. And I was like, I'm not saying he was ugly, but I was like, I don't understand why my entire Twitter timeline is like, thirsting over this.
Just
like,
wait till your TikTok starts doing edits of the scientist with like sexy music in the background. It's like slow motion panning across his face and
not
like
the fan cams.
Yeah, well, so blowing up mines in the ocean has got to be one of the coolest jobs ever, and I think despite the danger, I would love that job. I think I'd be having so much fun.
It's true. Because you just, like, you get the mines to pop up and then you shoot them.
Yeah, you shoot them with
like
a gun.
It's like a video game, but it's real. But I guess it's, like, it's not that dangerous because of, like, the boats they had. If they had had metal boats, like, they would, like they said, like, the U.S. had magnetic ones. So that's how they would blow up a lot of the boats. So they didn't, like, even if they rolled over one, like, it wouldn't, you know. And they were pretty deep down, too, so... Oh, there's the. There
you wouldn't
he is.
Want to smash?
I'm okay.
Sydney passes.
Bryce, I'm all right. Find a sexy edit.
He seems like a nice man.
What's that Josh Hutcherson meme going on right now?
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Holy cow. They got a ton of pictures of Godzilla in IMDb.
He looked good in this movie. I really was a fan of how slow he walked. It really reminded me of like the older videos and movies of Godzilla. Like they kind of, they really made it authentic-ish.
Yeah, I mean it's it's a good mix of both because you've got like, sorry, I'm gonna give you motion sickness doing this, but like you got these more dynamic poses, like he's able to look like pretty badass, but also most of the movie it's just literally like him.
Well, he's got a lot of weight to carry.
He's
but
very
I mean
big.
Just like the arms to the side, just very much like, yes, this is a man in a costume feel.
Which is cool.
It's cool.
It.
Yeah, I mean it. Yeah, as far as like the destruction scenes, it did feel awesome because it looked, you know, they used the CGI properly, which was like, you make it look like realistic destruction as opposed to, you know, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
yes.
Mech pushing over buildings that are obviously fake.
Yeah, and this is where we get Godzilla coming back again, right? Because they're blowing up the mines and they come across this giant Navy ship that is just destroyed.
Well, they were sent out to specifically go to that area.
Okay.
And find, like... they weren't told that they were going to find this wreck, but they do stumble upon it, and then they start thinking... And Koichi's like, I've fucking seen Godzilla before. This is exactly the kind of destruction that he would do. And then they're like, they put all their heads together and they're like, wait, are we fucking decoys before the rescue team comes? And they're like, we're gonna die. And the captain's like, we have to fight it. You guys don't understand. We have to fight it. Then they see Godzilla and they go, maybe we should run away. They're like, maybe we should.
He's so big.
Look at that.
It's so great. Like this, him swimming in the ocean, just looking at him. You're like, oh, fuck.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I stepped out of the theater once. So like while they're doing this mine sweeper stuff, they had kind of like a flash to like a newsreel showing the Bikini Atoll, you know, tests.
Yeah.
And then it obviously affecting Godzilla. And then it went forward like a year, and that's when I stepped out of the theater because it seemed like it was going to be more kind of newsreel stuff. And I came back right kind of as Godzilla was about to attack their boat, so I don't... I guess I missed that part where they're assigned to go check on something.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really, like, explicitly stated. Like, no one told them that they were assigned it. They just were on the boat working, and they were like, oh, I see why we were meant to go out to this area. And they're like, oh, the blah, blah, blah rescue team is coming with the big boat. And they're like, okay, great. And then Godzilla comes before then, obviously. And they get the idea to shoot... to put a mine in Godzilla's mouth and shoot it, which seems like a really good idea. And then they do it. And he regenerates his face immediately, which was like a oh fuck moment. Like, yeah. I was watching that, mm-hmm. I was like, wow, that's hard. That's hard as fuck. Like,
and it's a cool effect too, because it's like just weird bubbling, just like blah 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 blah. Now mm-hmm. his face is back.
Maybe I'm an outlier, but I've never liked regeneration effects in any movie I've ever watched. It always just feels so goofy because, I mean, I know there's not giant lizards that breathe fire, but something about regeneration just not being possible like that, it pulls me out of a movie.
I mean, lizards regenerate their tails like little geckos. They regenerate
their
tails. Yeah,
but not in seconds, you know? It's like, I just felt like, you know, he could have gone the rest of the movie with half his face blown up, and that would have been cool still.
That would have been cool. You're right. I don't know.
But then he would have been beatable, you know? And it would have been easier to kill.
Yeah.
Max,
he was
you
beatable.
Know, I'm sick and tired of your stickler attitude. You know, we're here to have fun.
I say one thing that I don't like. I gave this movie a 10 out of 10, by the way.
Yeah. If anyone should be complaining, it should be you, Bryce.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Where's the one thing that made you take off a point, Bryce? Point to
it was the regeneration. No, there's like a I don't really have a strong reason for taking off a point. Just mostly it's one of those that's like, did I enjoy it so much that I'm gonna like, I feel like I want to watch it again and show other people it? Like, that's like what, and that's how important is it? Like, that's kind of like the secret sauce for me. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like, what I was like maybe rolling my eyes sometimes at was like kind of the 50s feel, which is a throwback and they're doing it intentionally, but also it's just kind of funny, like having the a lot of scenes about like, what are we gonna do to defeat Godzilla? Like, okay, well, we have this idea and we're going to wrap them around with these bubble tanks and it's gonna sink them and then we're gonna lift them up. And it's just like a lot of exposition and a lot of like explanation about how are we going to kill Godzilla, that felt very much like an homage, but also it's just like, it just gets silly, you know?
See, with that stuff. That's what raised mine to a 10 when I was thinking about what I was going to score it, because I loved the like exaggerated acting. Like, Noriko is so like, she's so like, she'll throw herself on the ground and be like, do not go to work today. It's like insane. Yeah. I love that. I love the like,
my
we're
wife does that.
Kooky scientists and we can like, we're gonna throw something together and we're going to figure it out and woohoo, we're a team. And, I especially, my favorite part about like the 50s feel to it, was that they used the original Godzilla theme, which was awesome. Like when he starts.
That was
when,
cool.
Yeah,
which, I feel dumb because I didn't know that was the original theme. I was always exposed to it through whatever that remix is that they use in movies all the time. I don't know if is it a Wu-Tang? Is it a Wu-Tang song?
I thought it was going to turn into, I think you're right, that song. And then I was like, oh, wait, this might be where it came from. This is, like, the original. I did double-check it and looked up the original 1954 Godzilla theme, and it was exactly,
yeah,
exactly same exact everything. So I thought that
was
really
cool. Yeah, the theme is pretty great. I'm just expecting a hip-hop beat to come in at any second. But
yeah.
It's very effective in just, like, showing the weight and gravity of Godzilla just fucking shit up.
Yeah and
so,
they kind of so they figure ahead. Out that they're gonna be like, they're kind of meant to be decoys in this kind of like mathematical way where they're like, so how long until the big ship gets here? And there it's like, you know, 20 minutes, and they're like, oh awesome, how long until Godzilla hits Japan? Like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh well, something's got to happen then. And so they start, you know, shooting at him, and that's when his face blows up and stuff. Another thing I wanted to mention around this scene is, whenever Godzilla shows up, they say that like deep sea creatures float to the surface, which I thought was kind of fun. There's like lots of jellyfish everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like
the
a warning
nuclear
sign.
Right, it's because of the radiation that's coming off of him, it's like killing everything in the ocean, because those obviously weren't alive creatures. I thought at the beginning when it happened on Odo Island, I thought they were, I wrote down in my notes that I was like, fish eggs, question mark. I was
fish
like
eggs?
What the fuck is that? And then they explain it later that it's like deep sea animals, which is like, I mean, at least you can tell when he's coming, but he comes right then, like when you see them come up, it's like, oh, Godzilla's like right here. So
right.
See, I assumed it was like the pressure of him like swimming to the surface was just like sucking a bunch of fish up, but it could also be the radiation.
Could be both.
Well, I mean, it shows up on Odo Island and he's not supposedly not irradiated by that point.
That's true.
Oh yeah, he doesn't do the, does he do the heat ray when he's there? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
I don't think
he can at that point.
You know, we gotta dive deep into Godzilla lore to interpret this movie.
But
yeah, so I mean, the best scene in the movie to me is the attack on Tokyo. That's like,
oh,
I mean, you're
so
going to
great.
See a Godzilla movie, and Godzilla lands on Tokyo, and like, we're Norika has just gotten a new job in the Ginza district, which has been rebuilt. Ginza is still like the big district in Tokyo for business, and so what's his name, Koichi, is like trying to run to downtown to save Noriki before she's stomped, and then we see firsthand just like the destruction and like the panic, and it feels very much like an updated and feels a lot more real than the original Godzilla scenes, and it feels terrifying and very visceral, like the reactions to Godzilla terrorizing the town. And then like already it's horrible. He's just like knocking down buildings and stomping on everyone, and then he uses his superpower, the charge up ray, which is literally just an atomic bomb. He can shoot an atomic bomb out of his mouth.
Yeah, and so awesome. Like when yeah. his spikes go up one at a time, mm-hmm. like oh, it's so cool.
And he shoots it, and then that's like the really tragic scene, because it shows you kind of firsthand the effects of the shockwave in Noriko. Shoves Koichi behind a building like just in the nick of time, and then she gets blown away by this shockwave, and you're like, oh shit. And then just the scene after with Koichi reacting is like, I don't know, it lands really
well. That
was
my favorite scene of the whole movie, is him just staring at Godzilla, and he just starts screaming because he's so afraid and just watched everyone die, and then it starts raining this like black sludge from the sky from the atomic bomb,
the
like
fallout.
It's just so cool.
Yeah.
I liked my favorite scene was also in when he is destroying Tokyo, but it's the radio reporters on the top mm-hmm. of that building, and they're like, he's right in front of us, he's literally right there, he's so scary and gross and awful. And Godzilla looks at them and he's like to the whole building, and then they fall, and it's really entire scene just landed so well. It was incredible. I was like on the edge of my seat, like with my head in my hands, like, oh my god.
They don't pull any punches with the concrete landing on people and just crushing them to death.
Right.
You see so much of that in that scene.
And like you see the people's bodies like splatter, and you don't expect that from like such a like a high paced, like a lot going on kind of scene. You kind of think that filmmakers would kind of leave that like, oh, they get crushed and they're just underneath it, but no, it's very realistic if a monster was attacking your city. So after that, obviously Koichi is very depressed about missing Noriko. He regrets not marrying her. He meets up with the scientist and the captain and the kid, and they're all drinking, and they're like, we gotta fucking do something about this. Like, we gotta do something about this. And so a bunch of private citizens come together, and they're like, hey, the U.S. government isn't gonna do shit because they're worried about the Soviets, and the Japanese government isn't gonna do shit because they never do shit. So we need to do stuff. And they're all like veterans of the war. Like they've all seen warfare. They understand what this is like. And Koichi is like, so the scientist, the main scientist that we know, the sexy scientist,
the hot scientist,
he's like, okay, so our plan is we're going to have two ships, and in between it, we're going to have this like rope of Freon bubbles. And these Freon bubbles are going to make Godzilla sink to the bottom, and the pressure will probably kill him. And then Koichi's like, wait, what if that doesn't work though? And he's like, okay, our backup is that we have these flotation devices that are going to pop out and spring him back up, which like those two extreme pressure changes are going to kill him.
Their plan is basically to give Godzilla the bends.
Yeah. and so Koichi's like, is this 100% effective? And the scientist is like, obviously not. Like, we don't know what Godzilla is. We don't know what he's made out of. Like, we can't be for sure. We can't do all the testing that needs to be done in the time frame that he's going to come back. So we're just going to take a chance. And so then Koichi's like, fuck, like, we have to be sure about this. So he's like, scientist, can you get me a plane so I can lure Godzilla into the exact spot where the boats are so you guys can execute the plan? So then this is when he writes a bunch of letters to Tachibana from the beginning of the movie. And it was funny that Tachibana shows up and just starts, like, punching the shit out of him. And you're like, what's going on? And he's like, why would you disrespect me like this? And so it's implied that in the letters he pissed him off really bad. And he's like, if I made you mad, I knew you would come and find me. So he's getting pummeled. And then Tachibana's like, oh, shit. So you don't actually think those things about me? And Koichi's like, no, I just need you to fix a plane for me. And he's like, all right, fine, idiot. And apparently it's a really cool plane. It did look cool.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking a lot about this plane. And Koichi has nothing left to live for. He doesn't really, like, he feels bad for the little girl, Akiko, but, like, he misses Noriko so much, he doesn't have his parents anymore. He doesn't know what to do, so he tells Tachibana, he's like, take everything out of the plane, fill it with bombs, I'm just gonna fly into the mouth of Godzilla if this free-on-bubble plan doesn't work, and I'm gonna complete my mission as a kamikaze.
Yeah.
And we're all like, no!
Yeah, so the important, like, the two really important missing, or moving parts of this is there's a very strong theme of, like, him feeling very guilty about being a coward and not, you know, going through his mission, even though, you know, he knows it's the right decision, as well as, like, not firing on Odo Island. And so he's, like, looking to redeem himself with, like, okay, this is the justification for being a kamikaze pilot, because I literally know I can save a lot of people. But before he makes that decision, there's a big point in the scene where they're presenting the plan. They're presenting it to the civilians that are ex-military, and they're saying, like, listen, the military and the government can't actually do anything about Godzilla, because that's gonna mess with U.S.-Russia or U.S.-Soviet relations. So their hands are tied. But, you know, we can ask you to volunteer for this, and they're all, you know, military veterans and still suffering from PTSD, and they want to do it. And, like, the general or admiral or whatever, like, has the speech where he's like, listen, we didn't respect human life before during the war. Like, we didn't have the proper amount of respect. We were throwing, you know, suicide bombers and, like, you know, we're supply lines weren't being sent out. They're just, the government was using its people as fodder and as, like, a renewable resource, and not as, you know, the sacred human life or whatever. And he cited a couple things that were, like, that were indicative of that. And one of them was the suicide bombers and just, like, the unsafeness of the planes and not having ejection seats and all that stuff. And so they kind of make it a point where it's, like, not only is this trying to redeem, you know, and also it's kind of a stand-in for the defeat of the nation. They're like, it's kind of a weird stand-in, because they're all still kind of depressed that they lost the war and that, you know, they're defeated. So Godzilla is kind of a stand-in of, like, we can make it right. And I think they even have a line, something like that, which is weird as an American to watch. You're like, there's, like, a point where they're, like, taking pride and, like, no, we can make it right now because we lost the war, but we can make it right. And you're like, was it wrong for Japan to be, you know, defeated? So they make that point, and then it's kind of foreshadowing, because what eventually happens is
I need and to I catch saw this that. I didn't catch that in the speech.
They end it by saying we're gonna do this mission by sacrificing zero lives. Zero people
right.
will die.
Okay, so there you go.
Right.
Huh. I was
and
too
then
focused on the action.
What eventually happens is Koichi undertakes the mission, and of course, like, the scientist plans don't do anything. Like, I could have told you that a million miles away. So he is gonna fly the plane into Godzilla's mouth and blow him up real good. And there's a fake out, and then we realize, like, oh, Koichi ejected from the plane and he's actually safe.
I almost started
crying.
Did you guys catch
that? Did you see that from a mile off coming up?
No. I really,
not really.
Was like, I was shocked because the captain says, oh, you better not orphan Akiko, because you know, they're worried about him because he's obviously fucked up and he has this, he's immense guilt. They all know about this. They're his friends. They've known him for a while. And I was, the whole time I was like, Koichi, don't do it. Koichi, don't do it. And then when he pulled the bomb release thing, I was like, fuck. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And then like, everyone's like on the edge of their seats. And then you just see him in a parachute. And I was like, I'm going to cry. And I, like, almost did. I literally started crying a little bit. I was so happy. I was so happy
yeah.
for him. He grew up.
Yeah. No, it was great. I could see it because, like, it had the mechanic show him, like, okay, you pull this lever to arm the bombs. And then back here, there's this little lever that when you... And then it cuts.
And then it like...
And then it cuts out. And then the fact that they specifically mention the suicide bombers, and then also, like, we didn't even put ejection seats in the planes, which is, like, to me, I was like, oh, yeah, why didn't they put ejection seats in?
I also thought that.
Like, that's a good point. Like,
fucked up.
So... They kind of foreshadowed it of like, yeah, why didn't we put an ejection seat in there? I could have just done the same thing and then just ejected. So I saw that one coming off. What I didn't see was at the end. So yeah, spoilers. The emission is effective after he blows up Godzilla with his plane.
Godzilla
Not really.
Was already. He was weakened. Like, he was... It almost worked, like, when they put him down, and then they tried to shoot him back up. He chewed through the thing. The kid wasn't allowed to come, and then he pops up with, like, a million tugboats, and the tugboats work on the other boats. They pull Godzilla back up. He's very weak, but he's regenerating his heat ray anyways, and then Koichi, like, goes in there, fakes out. You find out he, you know, ejects...
Right.
He blows up Godzilla, and then Godzilla sinks, and you're like, oh my God, it worked. And then, flash forward, they get back to land, and oh my God. I was like, oh my God. And the neighbor who was watching Akiko was like, I got this telegram. And he reads it, and he's like, are you fucking serious? And then he goes to the hospital, and Noriko is alive. And
yeah.
I thought that was great.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was a very happily ever after ending, and then it cuts to Godzilla regenerating.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're probably going to make more movies. I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a foregone conclusion that Godzilla movies will still be a thing.
forever.
So yeah, it's a great movie. I think everyone should see it. If you haven't seen it, and even if you're not a fan of Godzilla movies, like... This would probably be, I don't know, to me, seems like an ideal entry.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it feels like a war drama with Godzilla. Like, that's why it's so good, is it's not just a monster destroying things, which is cool. It's that and more.
It was like
right.
the response to Oppenheimer, in my opinion. I was like, oh, this is...
More entertaining than Oppenheimer, if I'm being honest.
Never seen it too long.
Yeah.
You didn't do Barbenheimer? Come on.
No.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. I'm not going to go to the theater for 6 hours.
I did Barbenheimer, and I don't have any regrets whatsoever.
I saw them on separate days, but I liked Oppenheimer a lot more than Barbie.
So. Yeah, I'll tell you what. Oppenheimer first and then Barbie, like, because you're going to need Barbie after Oppenheimer.
That's very heavy. But yeah, this movie was awesome. I would definitely recommend it, like you said, Bryce, to people who haven't seen any Godzilla movies. If you like war movies, if you like monster movies, I mean, me and Max rated it a 10 out of 10. Bryce said 9 out of 10. I think this is just enjoyable for anyone. Like, there were some, like, 12-year-olds in the theater that were having fun. So, like, this is suitable for,
yeah,
like, you know, 12 and up, I would say. It's really good.
Yeah, I remember going to the theater with my friends when I was 16 to see our first Godzilla movie. It was 2014, so maybe I was only 15, actually.
Ooh.
But it was like, that was a big moment for us. It was very fun to go see the newest Godzilla movie. And so, this is really for all ages. I think kids can go see it and think it's awesome. So, yeah, I think everyone should see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, want to get into our voicemails?
Let's get into horror movie whores. All right, horror movie whores is where we check our voicemails. We got a bunch of voicemails since the beginning of the month.
We gotta find out if Robert the Farter's alive.
Oh yeah.
I was worried he did something drastic when HMT was going
down.
We're back,
man. We're back.
I don't know if we have any from Robert, but we have several from this caller named SJI Handyman. So let's start out with him.
Okay.
Hi there. My name is David Day. Not long time listener, first time caller. I'm calling from deep in the Puget Sound region of Washington State. I was just calling because I thought, you know, well, first of all, I was listening to that Exorcist Believer episode, and it had Max and Sydney on it, and I don't want to watch the movie. That sounds fucking awful to have to sit through that horrible, boring, like, all these, it seems like there's just a lot of horror movies that are just really horrible and boring. You gotta wade through a lot of them. Sydney and Max, I thought they worked well together. I thought that was a pretty good combo, you know? I thought, I liked the chemistry between Max and Sydney, between both of them and Bryce. And I thought, well, why isn't this the show? Why isn't this the podcast? This should be the podcast. And so I just wanted to, you know, call in and say they both did a good job. I liked that format with three people. Probably helps. I'll just withhold all of that because I don't want to get myself into trouble. Anywho, you guys are doing a great job keeping it classy over there. I hope HMT is doing well. Boy, I don't have anything left to say, so you guys have a good week. Bye.
Aww.
Well, I have good news for you, David Day, whoever you are. It is the podcast.
We did it. Thanks, David.
Yeah, so
that was
really
sweet.
Yeah, that was back on December 7th is when he sent that.
Oh,
so
wow.
Hadn't pulled the trigger yet, so rousing endorsement from David there.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, it's not so easy when you're calling in, David. You know, it's so easy to criticize callers. And like, why are they rambling so much? Get to the point. Anyways, next really from Beyond the Grave.
You know, this is Beyond the Grave, and I feel I've been real absent forgive me, I've been trying to power through a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast for about 3 months, and I came back here, and everyone really jumped the shark on this, oh, they're never coming back, and then I feel like you had an episode the next week being like, I got an update, still here, baby, and it's a whirlwind. But I listened to that Insidious review. I'm interested in that little twink Max. He could talk about stuff around here. But Insidious. Serendipitous, really.
Serendipitous.
Astral Projection. Rose Byrne. And what's his name? Patrick Wilson. Project onto my ass. How about that? But I noticed a funny tie-in of you guys talking about the Mormonism. Funny enough that Patrick Wilson played closeted gay Mormon attorney in Angels of America, which is kind of a horror movie. If you think about the horrors of HIV and AIDS in the 80s, 90s, just a suggestion. But I also felt like I really set up the fantasy of I'm in the library reaching for a book for, you know, Clive Barker's The Hellbound Heart. Someone else also reaches for the book. Who is it? David Day. We both open the book and start reading it, and then we lower the book to look at each other, and that red-faced Darth Maul guy from Insidious is there. Ah! And we both are rendered unconscious in the stacks.
Okay.
Anyway, have a nice day.
Wow.
How did he describe my physical appearance so well with one word?
That was fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
oh my
everyone
God.
Loves that little twink Max, you know?
I really love, I hope that he's okay with whatever fell, or if he fell in the middle of that voicemail.
Well, he's describing a fantasy where him and David have a chance meeting.
No, the noise where it was like.
At the beginning where he like tumbled and then he just
kept talking. Oh, right, right. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, thought he got in a car wreck. I do like that fantasy of him meeting David at the library and they reach for the same book. We
having
need more
meet cute
David
before.
Fanfic.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Alan from Atlanta. I'm sorry, I'm very sick, so I sound like crap. But I was just listening to the afterthought of When Evil Lurks, and you were talking about, getting to, you know, releases and, like, reviewing, you know, movie releases and everything. Are y'all going to do Godzilla Minus One? I know y'all did Godzilla versus Kong a couple years ago. I feel like this definitely, Godzilla Minus One definitely deserves to be reviewed. I feel like it's pretty popular as well. All right, that's all I got. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, I hope you listen to this episode, man.
Yeah. Alan, I have
it.
Good news for you.
Wow, this is my last message because y'all literally brought it up like minutes later. By the way, this is Alan again. Sorry, bye.
Yeah, so he listened and I think we talked about it in the afterpod.
That's
like,
awesome.
Just a minute later.
Yeah, there you go, man. We did it.
Hi, this is Beyond the Grave. To be honest, I've been skipping some episodes because I'm a little bent on this exorcism streak you guys have been doing. Not my favorite genre of horror, but I'm holding out. Hello, Sydney. Hello, Max. Kiss, kiss. Hug, hug. I haven't seen When Evil Lurks, but I'll get into it.
Okay.
Two things. Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin in a non-horror movie, but coincidentally, kind of black comedy, psychosexual horror, but not Moving On.
I would watch that.
It's like a a more grounded, promising young woman rape revenge film. Two, Saltburn. If David was still with us, he would be overjoyed. The amount of nudity and just no, it's caution to the wind, sexuality, no one even thinking twice about doing what XYZ, nasty, dirty, hot stuff. Just for David, the wiener's flying all over the place. I'm going to pour one out for my boy David, and then I'm going to lay my face on the ground and slurp it up. Anyway, talk to you later. Bye.
I really didn't
like
Saltburn.
Saltburn.
I didn't like it that much. It's with the reference that he's saying, slurp it up, Saltburn spoilers, Barry Keoghan, his character, slurps up Jacob Elordi's bathwater after Jacob Elordi jerks off in the bath. He drinks the bathwater after. Yeah, so that's what he's talking about. He licks the drain and everything. Yeah, I didn't really like the movie. Not because of that. Just, I didn't... There was no, like, real plot. It was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very raunchy.
Yeah, I want to... I kind of want to see it just because it's being talked about a lot, but mostly just because I want to see Barry Keoghan's dick, so, I mean...
Yeah, they... It's
I mean, why not?
Prosthetic. It was real.
All right.
Max.
Oh, no. Max.
No.
Well, we'll move on with Adam.
Hola y bienvenidos a Horror Movie Talk. Soy Más Allá de Tumba y conmigo están estas perras malas. En este programa repasamos películas de terror y nada más. Los nuevos estrenos en cine siempre tienen prioridad, pero también rebosamos películas de terror antiguas, tanto buenos como terribles.
Dang, we don't have Max to translate.
That was what Max said for, like, it was like, hi, welcome to Horror Movie Talk. That's, like, the intro. Like, yeah.
Okay, Max just texted me and said internet got knocked out because of the storm. So
fuck.
Just finished the episode without me. So that's unfortunate. Max doesn't get to translate for us, but one more from Beyond the Grave, and then there's some other people.
All right.
Hey, this is Beyond the Grave. I want to talk about the May-December relationship I saw on Netflix.
I saw that movie.
Which, from the trailer, I thought would be some kind of exhilarating thriller, young to old lesbian relationship between Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore. It was nothing of the sort. Real interesting. I loved how campy and soap opera-y it was. And I think I'm always going to be opening the fridge and going, I don't think we have enough hot dogs.
Did you like that one, Sydney? I haven't seen that one either.
Yeah, I ranked all the movies that I watched last year, and I put that at number 4. So, yeah.
Really?
I really liked it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't, you know, it's about like a teacher-student relationship and like the fallout of that or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it was based on the real people, Mary Kay Letourneau and Vili, I don't know his last name, but he was 12 and she was 34. And, you know, she went to jail for it and then had a baby in jail that was his. And then they lifted the restraining order and they got married and they had 2 more kids. And this was, I mean, it wasn't their names. It was just loosely based on that. But it's Natalie Portman is an actress who's going to portray Julianne Moore's character in a movie. And so she follows them around in their life. And yeah, he's like 35 in the movie. So it's about like 20 years later.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I forgot to show this, but this is the shirt I wore for Godzilla.
What does it say? Cop Killer?
It's the brand Pop Killer Hot Sauce.
Oh, Pop Killer. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you. Anime.
All right. This one's from Haley.
Hey guys, this is Haley, a fan from Houston. I just wanted to call in and say congrats to the new host. I'm a real big fan so far. Matt, Jenny, you guys are great. Bryce, obviously you're great. I just wanted to say I think it's awesome and that, sorry, I'm not very good at leading voicemails. This is my very first one, but I am also 24, so it's really cool to see hosts that are also my age. And Sydney, I think it's awesome that you're like a little stoner day, because same, I always love to relate to that. I don't know, I just wanted to express my excitement and to see where the future goes. Last night, y'all just did the live. I missed it, unfortunately, but I would love if y'all did more of those, because I think that would be so fun. And then I guess I just wanted to say I'm currently watching Marianne on Netflix, The French Horror. Pretty good if y'all haven't checked it out. And if so, I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts. All right, y'all have a great day. Bye, guys.
Bye.
What did she say about me? What did she call me?
She said you're a little stoner girl.
Oh.
You're a little stoner babe, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, that was really sweet. You did a great job on your first voicemail, I think. That, right. That was great.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, I'm actually really curious. Like, in a year, we should do another listener survey. We haven't done it for years, but like back in like the second or third year, we did a listener survey that like told us all about the demographics and stuff. I'm really curious, having some young blood and having a woman on here, like, if it will affect how many younger or women listeners we have, because that's always been like an imbalance. It's always like, you know, 30 to 40 is the biggest chunk, and definitely mostly dudes.
I mean, my girlfriends listen to this now, so I guess that's a few listeners that
right, yeah,
you know, we'll see.
My wife does not listen, but I can try to convince her.
I don't tell anyone close to me to listen to the podcast.
No, I don't
anymore,
either.
Because I'm like, oh no, I've said too many things. yeah, Marianne on Netflix. It came out like 2 or 3 years ago. That is one of the best horror TV shows I've ever seen. Like, I loved that show. It, you know, it's one of those where it's like, do you actually find horror movies scary? That one was like really had me on edge. Really well. And
it's called Marianne.
Yeah, very, very highly recommended from me. It
maybe
came out like
a Patreon exclusive, like of us doing the show or something.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was around, it came out around the time as one of the Flanagan shows. And it was like, oh man, like it's really good. Once we do one of those like one-off things of a horror series, you'll realize how much work that is. It's hours and hours. But no, I think the two that like, if I would want to go back and say like these are probably worth like actually covering, Marianne would be the top of the list, and then Them on Amazon.
Oh, I've heard good
like
things.
I absolutely
about
love
too.
To.
Yeah,
that one's fun.
I haven't watched them.
Okay, got a couple other calls from SJI Handyman.
Hi there, this is David Day calling from my tub. That's right, I'm enjoying a nice soak after a long, hard, cold day of work, really regretting the not podcasting anymore. You know, I just really miss it. But you know what's nice is now you got like, it's basically always sunny over there. You got Mac and Dennis, and I'll let you figure out who's who. And then you got Sweet D. And of course, Charlie's not there because I'm Charlie. And Frank is, I mean, it's, that'd be, I guess, Bryce's mom. Anyway, I just wanted to say I'm listening to you guys listening or talking about this pool glass shark movie. Sounds riveting. Really not not worried about having missed it, having been forced to watch it. But I will say that you guys are, you know, you're doing all right over there. Seems like I would like some more story arcs for your characters. I think you're kind of, I mean, I know a little bit about Bryce, so Max and Sydney are just a little one-dimensional, so do something about it. Bye.
Did you even listen to my bathroom story? That adds character.
Yes, it adds character. Also, David, you should have watched the live. Sydney and Max went into details on their life, I'm assuming. I don't know. I didn't watch them.
I talked about you, David, and I talked about our relationship, and it was sweet. It was a sweet moment that I talked about. So maybe you should go listen to the live.
Mm-hmm. A couple more from David. These are two more, and they're just from yesterday.
Hi, this is David Gay again. And I was just thinking about a new bit that I would like to see you guys do on the show. But you'd have to like, you know, preface, you'd have to like the word out on the show where we're taking live calls. And I'd just really like to, I'd like to hear people call in live to HMT, have some condos, ask for some advice, maybe about horror movies, etc. Anyway, and then also I was kind of thinking that maybe Bryce could stop talking so much and let these other people kind of, I don't know, it just seems like he's talking a lot. Oh, goodbye.
Live calls would even be hard as fuck to plan.
Yeah, I love that. He leaves and says, like, oh, figure out, like, a super technically complex issue that radio stations have to figure out.
Well, would I be like, hey, boyfriend, can you call in? And then just...
Right. Yeah.
Well, okay. This is what David needs to do. David, if you're listening to this, listen to me now. You need to take an administrative role in Horror Movie Talk. Because you have all these great ideas, and you can call in and share them, but we probably won't do them unless you force us to. You are still part owner, I assume, unless something has changed. So step up and do an administrative role and tell us what to do, and I'd love to do anything you say.
Yeah, manage us, man.
Yeah, why don't you be our producer in the background that handles all the calls. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it would be nice to take live calls. I mean, there'd be a way to take calls, but it'd be one at a time. It'd be like if someone called my cell,
right?
I could pipe it through my mixer. But there's no like board that I can put people on hold for. That's the problem.
Well, we could do something where like I leave and go into a chat room of people who are waiting to get in a call, and I send them to you one by one.
Yeah.
That could be interesting. I don't know.
It would depend on how many people actually would want to do it, and I don't know.
We'd have to post about it and be like, "Hey, this is the criteria. You guys have to do this, this, and this," and you know. But, yeah. I mean, maybe in the future, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Do I talk too much? Have I been talking too much in the last episodes?
I was going to say, it's funny that even with David gone, he's still trying to get you to talk less. If he could talk over you now, he would.
Okay, last one.
I've been watching these... I've been watching these afterpods with Sydney and Max on them, and it's just, it's like watching kids listen to their grandpa be like, oh, cool, grandpa, wow, a toasting key, you know, it's heavy, you don't say, wow, well, okay, well, very good, oh, no, everything's good over here. Not, you know, my parents are divorced. It's just a very, like, it's like a kid talking to a dad sort of thing. And I love it because it's so unintentionally patronizing on Patreon. Okay, bye.
Is that really how it plays? I didn't think that's how happening.
I mean, it is an interesting dynamic because I am very old and you guys are very young.
I mean, and not so, that big of a difference. You couldn't be our dads unless you were a teen mom. So, teen dad. Teen.
How old are you guys?
25.
Yeah, so yeah, I'd have to be a teen dad. But, you what's know, your... I mean, if my teacher was Julianne Moore, like, oh. I could make it happen, you know?
When's your birthday, Max? What day?
The 25th.
Okay.
All right.
So if any callers want to just send me money, uh-huh. go for it.
Join the Patreon.
Yeah.
No. Hit me up on Instagram and send it directly to me.
Tip jar.
Okay, that's all the voicemails. Thanks, David and Beyond the Grave and Haley and Alan for calling in.
Thank you.
We'll do this with a little more regularity. Call in with your questions, observations. Love to hear your input.
Make fun of us like David does. Who cares? Yeah. We love it.
Yeah. All right. I think we can wrap it up, Sydney.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our patrons. We don't have any new ones. I think the last two were my dad and my boyfriend. So thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. And, you know, this episode produced by me and edited by me if I can figure it out. But I will, because I caused a lot of technical difficulties. So I will do it to the best of my ability. Make sure to share anywhere that you want to share the podcast, tell your friends about it, put it on your Instagram story, put a sticker on the back of your car. I don't care. And, you know, we have Amazon Associates, and don't forget to call into our voicemail and you can be on an episode just like all of you just were. 682-253-4468. And we're out.
All right, see you everybody.
Bye.
Continue on the afterpod. Bye.
Bye.
Good day, sir. Good day, sir.
It's so loud.
That is what this girl with a scraggly woman. He had no face.
Wow, that didn't sound good.